I must therefore protect the Cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. Asmad mat sharanam goshtam. The Vrijbasis had by their natural attachment to Lord Sri Krishna completely taken shelter of the Lord at this time of great distress. As it is said by Lord Sri Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Ye yatha muni prapadyante yathams tathai prapadyante, that to the proportion a person surrenders to me, to that same degree I will reveal myself and give protection to such a devotee. Because the Vrijbasis abandoned all idea that they had any independent existent outside of the grace of Krishna, therefore Krishna's full mercy was upon them. To the degree we hold back, both internally and externally, to that degree, Krishna will also hold back. Sometimes it is said that Krishna does not see how much you give, but he sees how much you are holding back. After all, if a wealthy man gives 1,000 rupees, that is some pious activity. It is nice. But if a person who only has 100 rupees to his name gives 100 rupees, that is total surrender. Krishna does not discriminate between the intelligent and the unintelligent, between the, what I'm saying is educated or uneducated. He does not discriminate between the rich or the poor, between the talented and the untalented. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Krishna simply reciprocates with our love, whoever we are, whatever we are. And in this way, there is no qualification or disqualification materially. The question that Krishna asks when we come before his throne is, how much are you giving for my pleasure in my service, and how much are you keeping back for yourself? This is what ultimately Krishna will ask you in this life and at the time of death. How much have you surrendered to me, and how much have you kept for yourself? The residents of Vrindavan, their wonderful qualification is that they kept nothing for themselves. Whatever they had, whoever they were, was simply for Krishna. You know the wonderful story of when the gopis were approached and they were told that Krishna is suffering from a very terrible headache. And he is requesting the dust of your lotus feet to apply to his head. But you should know that if you place the dust of your feet on his head, you will go to hell forever. What was the gopi's consciousness? To immediately collect that dust and send its special delivery to Krishna as soon as possible. The gopi's consciousness was simply for Krishna. In fact, the gopi's consciousness was like this. If Krishna's headache is destined to last for 1 minute, if this is the duration of the headache he has, 1 minute, if my giving the dust from my feet to put on his head, if it relieves his headache and shortens its durations by 30 seconds, to give Krishna that pleasure and relief for that 30 seconds, I am willing to go to hell for the rest of eternity. This is the love of the gopis. It is not that, oh, Krishna will eternally suffer a headache and I will eternally go to hell if I can relieve it. No. Even if Krishna's headache is for 2 seconds, if I can relieve it by 1 second, I'm willing to go to hell for the rest of eternity. That is the nature of the love of the Brijbasis for Krishna. The selflessness, ahoitiki apratihata, utterly unmotivated, utterly uninterrupted. If the gopis were living in hell throughout eternity, they would be in bliss, knowing that 1 second less Krishna had a headache because, and this is all I have to pay for it, is eternality in hell. Such a wonderful opportunity he gave me to serve here. This is the nature of the love of the gopis. This is what Vrindavan means. To go to Vrindavan doesn't mean simply to put on a torn cloth and beg for rotis and chant the holy name of God. This is not what it means to go to Vrindavan. What it means to go to Vrindavan is to enter into the mood of the Brijbasis, of total surrender to the pleasure and the will of Krishna. Because this is what makes our chanting something wonderful to the ears of God, our surrender, our selflessness. The real spirit of Vrindavan is wherever we are surrendering our will to the will of Krishna, which is manifesting in this world through the will of the spiritual master. Shakshadharitvena samasta sastraya. The guru is as good as God because the guru is giving us the word of God. The spiritual master is teaching us the real and true process of entering into the eternal realm of Vrindavan. He is not giving us just a cheap external instruction. You go, you take a train, you get off at Mathura Junction, you go beg for some rotis, you chant so many lakhs of names a day, and that is Vrindavan. Anyone can tell you to do that. But to train you systematically how to relinquish every separate interest. The gopis, for the pleasure of Krishna, they were willing to eternally leave Vrindavan and go to Naraka Loka. Huh? Because they were willing to do that, they were actually in Vrindavan. Brijbhumi is an eternal realm, which is not only in a particular place, but it is in the heart of the devotee. And the place is revealed according to the heart of that devotee. So here we find, because the residents of Vrindavan were 100% sold out for the pleasure of Krishna, Krishna was 100% sold out to them. Sadhunam hridayam mayam, sadhunam hridayam tvaham, maranyatena janahi, naham tebhyamanak api. The Lord says, because my devotee knows no one but me, I know no one but my devotee. Because my devotee has given everything up for my pleasure, I give up everything for my devotee's pleasure. How wonderful it is to see. We are told by Srila Rupa Goswami to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. Some classes of men think, oh, then I will just meditate on being a gopi, or I will just meditate on being a cowherd boy, huh? Or I will just meditate on being a peacock. Or I will just meditate on being a Braj monkey. Or maybe I will meditate on being a lotus flower in the river Jamuna. Or maybe I will meditate on being Mother Yashoda. Huh? In this way, people have this idea of this is what Rupa Goswami means by following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. Of course, in a very high level of consciousness, yes, you enter into this mood of being the assistant of such a selected divine personality of Goloka. But in the beginning, we have to qualify ourselves. To follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan means, first, before imitating a gopi or a gopa, first develop the basic qualification that they have, which is total, selfless, unreserved surrender at the feet of Krishna with no other interest except Krishna consciousness, Krishna's service. This is what we mean in the initial stages by following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. That we know nothing and no one except Krishna is our shelter and our object of love. We have no attachments to anything or anyone except Krishna. In Vrindavan, the elder gopis and gopas, they had their own children, but they all loved Krishna more than their own children. In fact, their whole goal of life for raising their children is just so that they would be good friends to Krishna and render nice service to Krishna. Today, when we raise our children, we're thinking, oh, my child, my child, my child. What will be best for my child? What will be best for my child? And what else will be nice for my child? But the residents of Vrindavan, they had their children. They never think like that. They think, how can I raise my child in such a way that they can give pleasure to Krishna? That they can have nice, playful games with Krishna? That they can give satisfaction to Krishna? That they could love and be loved by Krishna. Not for my child's sake, but for Krishna's sake. Because I know if Krishna is pleased by my child, then my child will, there is nothing to worry about. He will be in the highest state of loving pleasure. Huh? So this is the way all the parents were thinking. Thinking only of Krishna and Krishna's service. And in terms of the gopis, the younger gopis, after some time, they all had husbands. But they all loved Krishna more than their own husbands. And that night of Sarat Purnima, when Krishna played the fifth note of his celebrated Bamsi flute, and under the Bamsi Vat tree, the gopis, they left their children, they left their in-laws, they left their own husbands. Why? Because ultimately their life was for Krishna. And when Krishna told the gopis, you have come in the middle of the forest, in the middle of the night, it is very dangerous. There are tigers, there are lions, there are serpents, there may be robbers and thieves. You have left all the protection of your home. You have thoroughly disappointed your husbands by abandoning them, and your children, and your in-laws, and the protection of your nice hearth and home. And you've given up your reputation by appearing like an unchaste woman. What is this? You should go home. This is no place for nice young girls like you. You have long life ahead of you to live. You shouldn't ruin everything now. They said, no, Krishna, what you are saying is not correct. Because you are the life of all life. You are the Paramatma in everyone's heart. You are the root of the tree. If we satisfy you, then all of these other attachments will naturally be fulfilled. All of our other obligations will be perfected only when we surrender our life to you. Devarshibhutaptinam pitrinam nakinkaro nayam nanicharajan sarvatmana yasharanam sharanyam gatomukundam parititya karatam. That all our obligations to the government, to all our forefathers, to all our family members, to all the demigods, they are all perfectly fulfilled when we surrender to Mukunda. Why? Because he is the source of everything that they are providing for us. Ultimately, everything is coming from Krishna. Sarava dharaman purityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarava papibhyo moksha ishami mashacha. And this is why Srila Prabhupada was very, very angry when these commentators would say, man mana bhavamad bhakto sarava dharaman purityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. They would say, when Krishna says me, he doesn't mean Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj. He means the unmanifest, impersonal, absolute existence within Krishna and within everyone. How is this? The residents of Vrindavan surrendered everything, not for some absolute truth that was ethereal and unmanifested, but to the personality of Godhead. They surrendered everything for his sake. And therefore, unless we have an understanding of the personality of Godhead as he is, there's no question of surrender in its true and pure sense. So the gopis, they abandon everything. And they explain to Krishna that in you everything resides, but without you all there is illusion, bondage, and attachment. Any attachment to anyone or anything in this world that we have, if it is any way separated from the service to your lotus feet, it is simply a cause of pain and bondage. This was the consciousness of gopis. Therefore, Krishna said, all right, what you have said is very nice. You have abandoned everything. You have surrendered everything simply for my pleasure. Please know that the gopis, they did not abandon their family members because they wanted to enjoy Krishna. Not at all. Krishna called them. Krishna wanted to enjoy them. They left everything so that they could give pleasure to Krishna. They were selfless. And they appeared that they wanted to enjoy Krishna only for the reason, and this is a confidential truth revealed by the acharyas, only for the reason that to the degree they made it appear that they wanted to enjoy Krishna, Krishna would enjoy them. After all, if you want to show love for your beloved, you have to make it appear that you are tasting something very sweet by serving your beloved. But actually, they were doing it simply for Krishna's pleasure, with absolutely not even the slightest trace of personal interest for themselves. Krishna played that flute. They know he wants to dance with us tonight. And to spend one night giving pleasure to Krishna by dancing with him, we are willing to be condemned for the rest of our lives. Condemned to being unprotected, to being refuted by society and everything else. If that's what Krishna wants, let it be. This is the quality of the total surrender of the Brijbasis to Sri Krishna. Therefore, when they were in danger, naturally, the Brijbasis, they knew no one but Krishna to turn to. But this is also a wonderful understanding that even that heartfelt direction to take shelter of Krishna when they are in danger can only take place by the mercy of Krishna. Because the residents of Vrindavan were so much attached to the service and the loving pleasure of the Lord, therefore when danger came, the Paramatma in their heart awakened by his mercy the exclusive desire for them to only turn to Krishna. They did not start looking for umbrellas. They did not start going here and there and everywhere else trying to make any separate arrangement. They had complete faith, complete trust, that if we simply turn to Krishna, there is nothing else required. Do you have that faith? The fact that we do not is the problem of our life. The fact that we do not have this implicit faith is the reason why we still suffer. So here we find the Brijbasis. They are completely taking shelter of Krishna. And they are taking shelter of Krishna in such a wonderful way. They did not say, Krishna, save me. The residents of Vrindavan, the gopas and gopis, they said, Krishna, please save your cows. Because we know you love your cows. And we, because you love your cows so much, we love your cows so much. So these rains will cause them too much distress. Please save these wonderful, beautiful cows of yours. And besides that, you are also known as Bhakta Vatsal. So if you see fit, you can also protect us as you like. But please, your cows, we know you want to protect your cows. So they came before Krishna, not simply for their own protection, but for the protection of those Krishna loved. This is a very profound understanding. That if we really want to approach Krishna for pleasure, we must not ask Krishna for my sake. But a higher principle is to pray to Krishna for the benefit of another. To pray to Krishna for the benefit of those he loves. Therefore, amongst Vaishnavas, it is the principle to always be praying to Krishna to help another devotee become Krishna conscious. To always be endeavoring and making sacrifices to bring another devotee closer to Krishna. To never put ourselves first before anyone. Because if we do, our endeavor will not be pleasing to Krishna. We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita of when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing his love and affection towards Sanatana Goswami, to all the other devotees. He was explaining as if he had five mouths the virtues of Srila Sanatana Goswami. He didn't say anything about anyone else there. They were all listening. If they were envious people, if they were people who desired recognition from their guru and lord, they would have thought, why is he saying so many wonderful things about Sanatana Goswami? Doesn't he recognize all the things I've done or who I am? These devotees were in the topmost ecstatic joy to hear Lord Chaitanya giving his mercy to Sanatana. The perfection of their life was simply to see another devotee getting the Lord's mercy. Sometimes we find in spiritual societies, people compete to try to get the recognition of their guru and Krishna. Just like Srila Prabhupada used the example that if two sons are massaging the two sides of the father's body, and they both want the father to think that I am a better son than my brother, that he should love me more than my brother, he should give me more recognition than my brother. So therefore, I'll massage him as well as I could on my side, but I will pinch him and stick him and stab him and punch him on my brother's side. And when both brothers are thinking like this, the poor father is in pain. But in Krishna consciousness, let me massage my side the best I possibly can, and let me not even know my father's here, that I'm here. Let my father think that it is my brother doing everything. Let him not even know that I'm here. Let all credit go to him. The father is all-knowing. Krishna is all-knowing. When he sees that this is our consciousness, then we truly become dear to him. When the spiritual master sees that this is our consciousness, in the innermost recess of his heart, it is at that place that we become most dear to him. So the Brijabasis knew that the greatest pleasure we can give to Krishna is by showing him how much we love his cows. In fact, the gopis also said like this, there is no one more dear in all of Vrindavan to Krishna than Govardhan Hill. Why? Because Govardhan Hill is supplying grass for the cows. And everyone knows how dear the cows are to Krishna. Because Govardhan Hill is not seeking to offer anything directly to Krishna, but because Govardhan Giriraj is supplying nice grasses to cows, therefore the gopis understood Giriraj is most dear to Krishna. He is serving the devotees. So the residents of Vrindavan were not doing this like a show. They were doing this because they knew by showing Krishna how much he loves their cows, this would give the greatest pleasure to Krishna. By showing the spiritual master how much we want to serve and love and elevate and encourage the devotees, this is what will give the greatest pleasure to my Gurudev. This is the consciousness of Vrindavan. And because of this most wonderful, wonderful approach of selfless desire for the pleasure of Krishna, when the residents of Vrindavan took shelter of Krishna in this spirit, Krishna, as we hear from his own words in this verse, he says, I must therefore protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. What else do we have to know in this life? Krishna has taken a vow to protect his devotees. What other consideration do we need, save and except, to become Krishna's devotee? Mame kam sharanam braja. Sarva dharman purityaja, mame kam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishame masacha. Therefore, at the end of this most sublime sloka of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, do not fear. This world is a place of fear. People are so much motivated by fear at practically every moment of life. We work so hard because we are afraid of lack of food. We are fearful of lack of shelter. We are fearful of not having our sense gratification or our maintenance. We are afraid of our family members not being affluent. We are afraid of our respectability in society. Practically everything we do is based on fear in this material world, whether we are conscious of it or not. But Krishna says, if you just be my devotee and surrender to me, do not fear. Why not fear? Because I have made a vow to protect my devotee. All you have to do is be my devotee. Don't worry about anything else. Do we have that faith? To develop that faith is the goal of life. And tomorrow we will read about how Lord Krishna protects his devotees in the most wonderful, wonderful way, which is sung and glorified by all pious beings for all eternity. How Krishna protects those devotees who have truly taken shelter at his lotus feet. Is there any questions?
As you said that we have to pray for devotees, he prays for his guru. What should we exactly pray for?
My dear Lord Krishna, if it be your desire, kindly relieve our spiritual master from this condition. We cannot demand from Krishna. When Srila Prabhupada was in critical condition on several occasions during his wonderful Leela as the world preacher of Krishna consciousness, for our sake, not for his sake, he would instruct every temple to offer this prayer to Lord Krishna. My dear Lord Krishna, Prabhupada said, you cannot ask him to save me. You must ask him, if it be your desire, please save my spiritual master from this condition. That is how we should pray to Krishna. And it should be in a consciousness that I am a neophyte devotee, and the whole world is full of conditioned souls. How desperately we all need the shelter of his lotus feet. How desperately we require his divine guidance and his causeless mercy. And not only that, but for our sake, he is accepting so much tribulation and so much suffering. And it's unbearable for us to see this. Therefore, Krishna, please, take my life. Let me, in utter surrender, show you how much I would like, if it is your desire, that you allow my Gurudev to be glorified and to have all opulence of all of his desires to be fulfilled. and that he may be free from these sufferings.
Another question is, sometimes we do some austerities, like we fast, or for example, Vrindavan, we go for parikrama, and if we say that, let these results of my activity, like fasting or going around Govardhan, be transferred to a particular devotee for his benefit. Is that true? That is it really that these things are happening, that we vow such things and that pious results are transferred?
Krishna fulfills the sincere desires of his devotees. Vasudev Dat prayed to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that let me suffer in hell eternally and take all conditioned souls back to Godhead. And Lord Chaitanya said, Krishna cannot refrain from fulfilling the desire of his devotees. Therefore, because you were, but your desire is tested by Krishna by the degree you're willing to make sacrifice and surrender. Because he was willing to make such a sacrifice and surrender so much, that meant his desire was so strong and so pure that Lord Chaitanya said, because of your desire, I will send everyone in this universe back to Godhead. And you don't even have to go to hell, even for 1 second. But he was willing to. Yes, if you want to do some austerity or pray for the benefit of another, Krishna will certainly help that other. But our prayer will have potency to the degree we are pure and we are surrendered. And we are willing to make sacrifice. That is the sign of our love. So Hanuman did great things. We may not be so pure. We may not be so elevated and surrendered, but we should be striving like a little spider. And certainly whatever prayers we offer for the benefit of another, Krishna will hear and he will help. He will certainly fulfill our desires, especially if it is a desire for devotional service. And the greatest form of devotional service is to help encourage another person to be Krishna conscious.
Is there any change in the effect of the prayer if it is done in the holy place and if it is done in the ordinary place?
Anything that is done in a holy place has a special quality. It is intensified. No doubt. But at the same time, we should know that wherever we are really giving our life in the service of Guru and Krishna, that becomes a holy place also. Srila Prabhupada, he would pray for the welfare of his disciples. It's not that he went to Vrindavan every time he wanted to play, because the fact is his heart was Vrindavan. Wherever he was praying, it was Vrindavan. Wherever a devotee is surrendering to Krishna, that devotee's heart becomes the holy dham. Yes?
Maharaj, when we perform such devotional services as performing the parikrama of the Govardhan Hill, then it is ahaituki.
It is what?
Ahaituki, I mean without any expectation. But if we say that the results of this should go to someone else, then there is a hetu, then it becomes karmakanda.
No. If you want the results to go, that this person business is successful, or if that this person becomes the prime minister or wins the election, then it is karmakanda. But if the results are for this person's spiritual benefit, then it is devotional service, and it is a very sweet and pure form of devotional service.
Maharaj, since last 2 days you've been talking about surrender and degree of surrender. Now, and you also said that
by the way, this our worshipable deities are named Radha Gopinath. He is, Nath means the Lord, and he is our Lord. So therefore we should follow in the footsteps of the gopis. He is our Gopinath. That doesn't mean dancing with Krishna in conjugal ras. It means that mood of complete surrender. We should be striving and aspiring to approach Gopinath in that mood. Yes.
Well, the last 2 days you've been talking about surrender, degree of surrender, and to that extent Krishna reveals himself and reciprocates. You use these two words, reveals himself and reciprocates. So how do we measure to what extent are we going? Because very often devotees are, I've seen even in my case or many other cases, they don't know how far they've gone because our Guru Maharaj is not, you know, there to chastise us, there's nobody to make very strong push for us. Sometimes you are not here. So how do we measure? Because
it is a question of our sincerity. If we are really sincere, it will be revealed by Krishna. Again, we should analyze in our own life. How much are we offering to Krishna, or how much are we holding back? If we are sincere and honest, it will be quite obvious to us. If we're not sincere and honest, then it will be a very confusing subject. Whether we're a brahmachari or a sannyasi or a grihastha or a vanaprastha, whether we're a brahmin, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, the same principle is there. What is ours to give to Krishna? Our time, our intelligence, our words, our wealth, our abilities, our health. Of all these things, how much of it is really and truly being directed? It may be direct, it may be indirect. But how much of it is either directly or indirectly truly going toward the mission of Guru and Krishna, toward Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement? And how much of it are we keeping off to the side for other purposes? Brahmacharis also. They can keep so many things off to, maybe not wealth, but they can keep certain things for themselves on the side by being lazy, by not being willing to do whatever is asked. In so many ways, at every moment we have a choice. So we simply have to analyze both each part of our existence, and we must also analyze a purview of our entire existence. And how much of our life, which includes everything, is directly or indirectly being utilized in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement? And how many of it are we trying to keep apart from that? And if we are sincere and honest that we really do want to surrender, then it will be very obvious. And if we see that, my God, I'm really keeping a lot back, that should actually make us humble. We should think, God, I'm really not a very good devotee at all. I thought I was, but when it really comes down to the philosophy, I'm not such a good devotee. How can I improve? How can I gradually improve and offer more and more and more to Krishna? It's very difficult and oftentimes unadvisable to try to just surrender everything immediately, because can you maintain that platform throughout your life? but we should be at least gradually more and more and more and more and more giving our life for Krishna. Never going a step backward, constantly going forward. And we should also not see how much we've given. If we see how much we're given, we'll become proud, and it will spoil the offering. We should see how much we're holding back. Huh? This is a humble consciousness. If a devotee thinks, I've given this much, he becomes proud, then that offering becomes tasteless to Krishna. But however much we give, we shouldn't even think about that. We should think how much I still have left that I'm not giving. Then we become humble. Huh? We become humble. Thinking, just see what a rascal I am. I've given 10 crores of rupees. We become humble. Thinking, just see what a rascal I am. I've given 10 crores of rupees, but I still have another 5 left. Huh? So that type of devotee doesn't think I've given 10 crores. He thinks, what a rascal I am. I'm keeping 5. Huh? In that way, the 10 he's given is offered with such humility. It's pleasing to Krishna. There's no pride. Or if a brahmachari goes out and preaches to 1,000 people, he thinks, I'm so great. I just preached to 1,000 people. But that brahmachari, no, he won't think like that. He'll think, I've just spent 10 minutes contemplating sense gratification. What a rascal I am. I could have given that time to helping others become Krishna conscious. Huh? In this way, we should not be proud of what we give to Krishna. We should be humbled by how much we are still holding back. And if that's the direction of our consciousness, then we'll really make wonderful spiritual advancement. Huh? And if we just, by that process, it will be very, very easy to come to some nice calculation of how I can improve in my devotional service. Because in most of our cases, we have to simply try to improve, gradually, continuously improve. Do not try to be a pure devotee in one day. Just make progressive and steady steps forward toward pure devotional service every minute and every day. Try to improve every day. And simply by that effort, Krishna and Gurudev will be so pleased with us that their mercy will be showered upon us at every moment. You had a question?
You just said that we should forget whatever good we have done, and we should not remember any offenses which anybody has done to us. So how can we forget the offenses which others have done towards us? It's very, very difficult.
If you really think that you are not a very exalted personality, you'll think that I deserved it. It was an offense. Ambarish Maharaj, he was a great devotee. Durvasa Muni created a monster to kill him. And Ambarish just said, I did. Krishna, if you think I deserve to die, then it's the best thing if he kills me. No problem. Krishna thought that this was terribly offensive. And he sent his Sudarshan Chakra to chase after Durvasa Muni for one full year. And after that one full year, Ambarish Maharaj did not eat for a year. Because until Durvasa Muni took his prasad, he couldn't eat because he was still a guest. He still considered him a guest. So when Durvasa Muni came and fell at the feet of Ambarish Maharaj said, I forgive you for your offense. He said, I'm such a sinful rascal that I deserved whatever you did. So you didn't offend me at all. This whole reaction is some leela between you and Krishna. It has nothing to do with me. I deserved it. Huh? Similarly, Srivas Thakur, when Gopal Chapala put all of the paraphernalia for tantric puja for Durga in front of his house, blood and all of these other things, simply to disgrace his name, Srivas Thakur called the whole village of Navadweep to his front yard the next morning and said, I just want you to all see that at night when you're all sleeping, I'm secretly worshipping Durga. It should be known to all of you. I'm worshipping her in these very, very terrible tantric ways. He didn't say, oh, this is Gopal Chapala. He's trying to ruin my name and fame. He's an offender. He's a demon. Actually, I can prove to you that I'm having kirtan all night. You ask Gadadhar Pandit, or you ask Mukunda, they'll tell you, I'm having kirtan all night, and I'm there, and I never leave. So it's not possible for me to have done this. No. He didn't defend himself. He said, just see, I am actually a Shakti Bhakta. Huh? I'm a gross materialist. I deserve to be disgraced. So Srivas did not accept any offense from Gopal Chapala because he thought he deserved worse. It's only when you think that you're in such a position that you don't deserve to suffer that you take offense by another devotee. But if you think that I need so much purification and I deserve so much suffering for my purification that if anybody treats me terribly, it's just Krishna's mercy coming through that person. That person should be awarded for giving me so much of a chance to purify my ego. Huh? That's the way we should think. But Krishna may not think like that. That's his business. But if you're expecting something high, then you're offended when you get something low. But if you're expecting something low, then how can anything offend you? I remember one time going to one of Srila Prabhupada's dearest godbrothers, and on behalf of some others, I fell at his feet and begged for his forgiveness for any offenses, and he started to cry. He said, I am the worst sinful criminal. How can anyone commit an offense to me? And he was saying this from his heart.
So Prabhupada said?
One of his godbrothers. Adivo, thank you very much.